There is a secret that most pro athletes, elite CEOs, and high performers all know. They all have a group of world-class coaches working for them to help them optimize their potential. At Super Athlete Radio, our goal is to provide you with the caliber of world-class coaches and guests to help you unlock your potential, dominate your industry, and dominate your life. Let's get better today. What's up, Super Athlete team? In this episode of the podcast, we are going to talk about what's more beneficial than high-intensity interval training to burn fat. And we are also going to talk about the power of the training over the training and the trusting mindset. And if we have time, we're going to go into why eating a bunch of soy protein shakes is not good for you. But high-intensity interval training has been emphasized repeatedly in the United States, especially over the last few years, as a great way to burn fat. And I agree with that. It is beneficial. We have included that in many of our programs with our clients. The science is pretty much unequivocal that it is a better way to lose fat than to do steady state cardio, which in many cases can be long distance cardio, can be damaging to the body, to the mitochondria, and to your cells. But I wanted to talk a little bit something here of HIIT not being the be all end all. A lot of my background in athletic performance comes working with my mentor, Remy Korkemi, who is from the Soviet Union, was one of the, still is, in his mid-90s, one of the best track coaches in the world. And because of that, I've always been a, because I saw it firsthand, the benefits of the training, I've been a huge advocate in terms of how the Soviets trained their athletes, which gave them the opportunity to be very dominant in many sports over the decades, and before the Soviet Union broke up, of course. And what I wanted to talk about today is something called AGT, anti-glycotic training. And this is based on the work of Yuri Vershansky, who his book Super Training has become renowned globally for what the benefit and how to apply his principles to improve speed, explosiveness, and power, especially the vertical jump, and doing it in a scientific way. And also his principles in there, he does an in-depth job of, you know, really laying out how he was able to develop these athletes and turn them from very good to best in the world. And he does, it's all very science-based. So what his original idea was, because when you think about how do we build endurance or how do we burn fat, which is the concept of cardio or long distance running, or in many cases, what people want to do with HIIT, it's how long can we go before we have too much lactic acid in the body and we're unable to go any farther, right? So people who go into our super athlete training program here at Super Athlete, one of the tests we have them measure is, or one of the skills we have them measure is what their VO2 max is, which is a measure of this. And you can get that done in a lab, or you can do it the old school way, do the Cooper test, which is basically just run as far as you can for 12 minutes. But what Yuri Vershansky, I'm still probably butchering his name, he had a revolutionary idea when it came to training endurance. He said, what if instead of training the athlete to tolerate ever-increasing concentrations of lactic acid, we train them to produce less of it? So to improve endurance, in this case, if we're talking about fat loss as well, we can put that in the well, because if you're able to go longer and train harder, then you will burn fat. Then instead of trying to see how much
lactic acid you can accumulate, how much, instead of seeing how much lactic acid you accumulate, see if your body has the ability to just produce less of it, which really is a revolutionary idea when you think about it. And then that brings me to the work of another Soviet coach, Pavel. And he really dug deep into this, because Verhashansky, his main focus was on speed and explosiveness and vertical jump training. So he didn't go too deep in here. Pavel took Verhashansky's theory, and this is, and he followed it. He went deeper. And this is what he says. While Verhashansky did not speculate on the biochemical events powering his innovation, his successors did. They hypothesized that by creating aerobic conditions in fast fibers, anti-glycotic training increases the size and number of mitochondria in them. If you know me, when it comes to health, nutrition, longevity, you've heard me say this 1,000 times, just the power of mitochondria and taking care of those millions and billions and trillions of mitochondria which reside within our cells. So any type of training that increases the quantity and quality of mitochondria is going to be beneficial. There has been research that says high-intensity interval training does it as well. And Pavel talks about kind of the difference of these two things here. Okay, so while Verhashansky did not speculate on the biochemical events powering his innovation, his successors did. They hypothesized that by creating aerobic conditions in fast fibers, AGT increases the size and number of mitochondria in them. Unfortunately, according to some very reliable Western research, this only works in slow fibers. Shortly after hitting this first wall, this is Pavel talking, I plowed into a second one. Some Russian specialists stated that high acidity destroys mitochondria. So high amounts of lactic acid hurts mitochondria. While in the US, high intensity interval training is used to build mitochondria. Reconciling these contradictions took me several years and many headaches. Without going into gory details, this is what the Strong Endurance Seminar is for, and this is what I concluded. Soviet and Russian anti-glycotic training, while it somewhat increases the mitochondrial quantity, size, and number, it is not optimal for it. It excels at enhancing the mitochondrial quality. Upgrading the mitochondria to handle heavier traffic and rendering the incoming acid harmless. So this goes back to what Verhashansky was talking about in how less lactic acid is produced by this sort of training. High intensity interval training increases both mitochondrial quantity and quality, but in a haphazard way and often at an unacceptably high cost. Western scientists did a fine job of identifying the cellular pathways leading to mitochondrial biogenesis or creation. They traced the metabolic events triggering these pathways. Other scientists, those who experimented with HIIT, paid token attention to these discoveries and viewed them out of context of the many biochemical reactions taking place at the same time and some of the events happening in the body at large. The resulting training protocols worked, but often inefficiently and with serious side effects, like drugs with long disclaimers and small print, deep soreness, low energy, stress, hormones out of whack, free radical damage, unfavorable changes in the heart. Now this, he's referencing that it's sort of high intensity interval training that where you're really burning yourself out, like it's extremely taxing. You know, like 50 box jumps followed by, you know, 25 clean to overhead splits or something wild like that. There is positive, productive forms of high intensity interval training, but especially for a lot of you guys, I mean, the audience that we're trying to serve, we're not trying to add to your stress levels. We're not trying to get you more sore because many of you are competing in high levels in sports and are working 14 hours a day. we're not trying to do those things. What we're trying to do is we're trying to burn the body fat, get you stronger, get you more powerful, and have you feeling refreshed. So I thought this was super interesting and super relevant. And where I wanted to kind of end with that is, okay, so what is a way that you can actually apply this? Is high-intensity interval training, for the most part, it's usually doing a certain amount of reps for time, let's say 20 seconds, and then having a rest, and having the rest being less than the time that you worked. So the common one, one of the most common is the Tabata, 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off. Do that for 8 rounds. And that is a form of high intensity interval training. And anti-glycotic training, on the other hand, would be something like each minute on the minute. So the example that Pavel gives in this book is do 10 kettlebell swings and then rest until the minute is up and then do 10 more and do that 8 times. We like to do this with trap bar carries. In our programs, we like to do this with clean to overhead splits. But that is a form of anti-glycotic training. And it is a way to burn fat, get you stronger, and enhance the quality and improve the health of your mitochondria without you producing a lot of lactic acid. So if doing this correctly, you're not going to feel super burnt out when you are done with the workout, which of course is what we want for the most part, except sometimes when, you know, we want to see how much you guys can take, or it's something that we all should be doing sporadically on the schedule, but sporadically. Okay, next subject I want to talk about on this Free Flow podcast was this idea of the training mindset versus the trusting mindset. And this goes back to, you know, we have so many people in our programs who are competing at a high level in sports, and or they have high pressure performances in their business that they need to show up for. And so, you know, we're very blessed to have a number of mental performance coaches involved with Super Athlete, like Mike Gerson, Carlos Sophie Diaz, and I can go, we have more, because it's just a huge aspect of what this comes down to and your ability to perform. But one of the best business books I've ever read is a book called Overachievement by a gentleman by the name of John Elliott. And he talks about this idea of the training mindset versus the trusting mindset. And what he talks about there is, all right, this is from the book. To be sure, great performers are well-trained, experienced, smart, and in some cases, divinely talented. But the way their brains work during a performance is a lot more like a squirrel's than like Einstein's. Like squirrels, the best in every business do what they have to do without questioning their abilities. They flat out trust their skills, which is why we call this high-performance state of mind the trusting mindset. Routine access to the trusting mindset is what separates great performers from the rest of the pack. So I love this, and there's so much we could go into here. Another one of my mentors is former Chicago Bulls, or former strength conditioning coach for Michael Jordan of Chicago Bulls, Dwayne Wade. Who else? Kobe Bryant, a gentleman by the name of Tim Grover. And what he talks about is don't think. You think too much. Don't think. And he's talking about it in this context of when it's time to perform, don't think. So put in the reps in your training. Make sure that you are putting in those hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of reps, getting those reps in. And then when it's actually time to perform and or compete, to not think about, well, I should say this next, or I should do this next. You know, I just had this working with a MMA coach yesterday, a master level coach at Goat Shed here in Miami. When he talks about, you know, drills are great in striking because they train the nervous system. But when it's actually time to fight, you just want to use your eyes and go based off what your eyes see rather than, okay, once I throw this jab, then I'm going to try and do a takedown, or he's going to throw a hook, so I'm going to counter it. That's too much thinking. It's going to slow you down, and it's not reality because you don't know what the other person's going to do. So he talks about this exact same principle of the training mindset versus the trusting mindset. So the reason I really want to bring this up for you guys here is don't think. When it's time to perform, when it's time for you to go, if you put in the work, which I know so many of you have who follow us, you know, again, this isn't about getting you guys from below average to above average. It's about getting you from above average to world class. Is don't think, just do. And I love the analogy that John Elliott talks about here of the squirrel. Like when a squirrel, you see a squirrel running across a telephone wire 50 feet up in the air, it's not thinking about, oh, well, what's going to happen if I fall here, right? No, it's just running across telephone wire. It doesn't have a PFC. It doesn't have a prefrontal cortex. But that's the mindset we want to perform when it is time to, when the bright lights come on. I mean, so much, again, of what we teach is like, it's not about managing stress or eliminating stress in your life. It's how do we show up and embrace the stress and conquer the stress when the time comes. And this is just another tool. And this tool is, you know, double down on your preparation and then also make sure to, when it's go time, to not think and just go. And really quickly, another great piece that he talks about here in this book, another great story, this idea of managing stress. Because that's one of the most common challenges we get with people inside our programs in terms of challenges that we help them conquer is, how do we get a better job of managing stress? I know if I manage stress better, then I'm going to have more energy. My body's going to respond to training better. I'm just going to live a happier, more fulfilled life. And John Elliott gives a great analogy here, which is, let me find it. Again, this book, Overachievement, is one of the best business books I've ever read. Maybe because so much of it's, he talks about the power of your physiology. All right, this is what he says about how the way to look at people who say they want to manage stress. Working on techniques to manage stress is a bit like trying to win the Indy 500 by putting a governor on the engine of your race car or swapping out a powerful V12 or a V4 because it offers a quieter ride. You wouldn't do that. Not if you were after the checkered flag. Not if you were racing star Jeff Gordon. This book's a couple of decades old. I don't think Jeff Gordon is still racing. Shout out to NASCAR. No superstar is about to give his opponents an edge, nor should you by trying to relax when the pressure is on. So he said literally, by trying to have yourself relax in pressure, stress-filled moments, you're giving the competition an advantage. And he says the pressure offers an opportunity for us to play at our edge and push just beyond to the next edge. So the next time you're feeling stressed out, look at it as a vehicle to have you perform better, to step up to the challenge of what life is bringing you. Let's talk about soy. Not a big fan of soy. I haven't been a believer in soy in a long time. And it's not now in the mainstream as much as it used to be. But there is Soy's not good for you. So in terms of protein, we had a short on this in terms of what protein you get. Make sure that the protein you get is lab tested. It's coming from a grass-fed animal, and you know the source. Like for like a protein powder, that's mostly where I'm going with this, because a lot of people still eat Vega is one of the brands. Shout out to Vega. I'm not trying to knock your brand. You guys are doing eight figures, so y'all are doing all right. As like a major brand, but it's just not good for you. And I want to share with you why. So soy contains large amounts of natural toxins or anti-nutrients, chief among them the potent enzyme inhibitors that block the action of enzymes needed for protein digestion. So it inhibits your ability to digest protein, which many, you know, people, they use soy as a form of protein, and soy is actually inhibiting the protein from actually even getting digested. Soybeans also contain hemagglutinin, a clot-promoting substance that causes red blood cells to clump together. They also contain goitrogens, substances that suppress thyroid function. And soy has one of the highest phytate levels of any grain or legume studied. We're going to talk about phytates in the next episode. Super important. Phytates block the absorption of minerals, and fermentation reduces them. So fermented foods are good. More fermented foods are good for you, especially, you know, we'll talk, I think in the next episode, we'll talk about the importance of making sure that you get your minerals, and also why phytates and things like lectins disrupt your ability to get minerals into your body and have them, your body available, have the minerals available to you, even if you're digesting them. Soy is often touted for its phytoestrogens, but whether that's a good thing or not so good thing depends on many factors such as sex and age, for example. As long ago as 2005, the Israeli Health Ministry issued a health advisory that strongly recommended that the consumption of soy foods be limited for young children and adults, and that soy formula is by avoiding altogether by infants. And an article on soy protein infant formula in the Journal of Pediatrics, Gastroenterology and Nutrition suggested that soy protein formula has no nutritional advantage over cow's milk protein, and the high concentration of phytate, aluminum, and phytoestrogens might have untoward effects. Okay, and this is from one of the best nutrition books that I believe is out there. It's by a gentleman named Johnny Bowden, and it's one of the 150, the 150 healthiest foods. So many nutrition books, they're all right, but I just think this one's really good. This is what he says about soy. Fermented soy products such as miso and tempeh, fermented the old-fashioned way, the way they are in Asia, are healthy foods, as are most traditionally fermented foods. Example, sauerkraut. Fermented foods, including fermented soy products such as tempeh, are great sources of prebiotics and probiotics. Okay, so when it comes to, as long as it's fermented the old-fashioned way, soy is a health food when it comes to stuff like kimchi, sauerkraut, tempeh, miso. That's good. Most soy products, e.g. soy chips, soy milk, soy ice cream, soy protein, soy tofu ice cream, soy burgers, soy cheese, soy lattes, and all the rest are junk food and no healthier than the foods they replace. I would not feed soy formula to infants and small children unless there are absolutely no other choice, and there usually is. I would not make soy my only source of protein under any circumstances. Vegetarians, please take note. And I do not recommend supplements of soy isoflavonoids. I thought that had to get out there on soy. I know it's not, most of you guys, I mean, so people aren't eating soy like they used to, but still, it's not good for you. We'll talk about, in the next episode, we'll talk about phytates and how that is, those are really not good for you, because if you don't have your minerals optimized in your body, this is why, we just live in a really special time in human history. Get your blood work done quarterly. You know, if not with us, somewhere else. But get your blood work done quarterly. See what minerals you're deficient in, because they're the building blocks of your energy and your performance. Okay, so I hope you guys found this episode helpful, enjoyable. What did we talk about? We talked about anti-glycotic training as a way to for fat loss and to improve your endurance rather than steady state cardio and or high intensity interval training. We also spoke about when to apply the training mindset and when to apply the trusting mindset when performing. And we also just talked about how soy, it can be good for you if it's getting fermented the old-fashioned way and you're getting it in stuff like sauerkraut and tempeh. But overall, soy is not good for you. I look forward to seeing you guys at the next episode. Do me a favor. If you have not yet given us a review on what your favorite podcast platform, whether that's Spotify, whether that's Apple, whether it's wherever else you listen to podcasts, Amazon, do us a favor. Do that, because it is the easiest way to support Super Athlete Radio. And it is totally free. Let's get better today.